Welcome to another episode of Commission Chats. I'm your host, John Scapini. Commission Chats is a podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the United States Sentencing Commission. Today is part 5 of our Problem Solving Courts miniseries, where we'll be joined by Chief Judge Michael Urbanski and Linda Kring, Judge Urbanski's career law clerk of the Western District Court of Virginia. They spoke with my colleague Lori Baker about their participation in Problem Solving Courts in Virginia. If you missed any of the other episodes in this miniseries, they're available on both Spotify and iTunes. I'll now pass it over to my colleague, Lori.
Good afternoon, Chief Judge Urbanski. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
Let's start by talking about your background. How long have you been on the bench, and how did you come to be involved with problem-solving courts?
I'm here with my career law clerk, Linda Kring, who is instrumental in our drug treatment court here in Roanoke. And I'm grateful for her enthusiastic commitment to this program. I've been on the bench 20 years. I was a magistrate judge for the first 7, and then I've been a district judge for going on 13. Got involved with alternative courts starting when I was a magistrate judge. When I was magistrate judge, we had a lot of veterans in our court who were charged with various criminal offenses because we had a VA hospital located right near us, and also some veterans who were in national parks and on other federal property who were charged with petty offenses. And it seemed to me at the time that those folks were suffering from mental health issues and substance abuse issues, and the traditional tools we had in our toolbox, incarceration, fines, really weren't getting at the root cause of the problem. So I went to the VA. They were incredibly helpful. They had a Veterans Justice Outreach Program, and we partnered with them to get these folks who were charged with these new crimes diverted into treatment and out of the traditional remedies of incarceration or fines or what I could do. I started that program in 2010. It was with the significant help of then Magistrate Judge Paul Warner out of Salt Lake City, who started the first veterans court in federal court in the U.S. And I talked to Judge Warner, and he was incredibly helpful to me in getting ours started. In fact, I pretty much mirrored our program after what he had done. Sure. It's a small program, but it's been successful over the years in helping some veterans get treatment instead of simply being repeat offenders.
So you were involved in the development and implementation of that veterans treatment court, but you have other treatment courts operating in Roanoke or other places in your district, correct?
In the Western District of Virginia, we have had historically a number of reentry courts, and we still operate those. And those are for, you know, taking large groups of people who are coming out of the Bureau of Prisons, working with them, much like Judge Restrepo's STAR program in Pennsylvania, working with them to get housing, get jobs, get education, and then if those folks successfully completed that, those folks would get some time off their period of supervised release. And then the third kind of court we have is a court I started in fall of 2018. It is our drug treatment court, and it is different than the reentry court because it's both front end and back end. In other words, we have some people who are charged in new informations or new indictments who are referred to our court, as well as many folks who come before us with supervised release violations. Unlike the reentry courts, in which folks aren't facing a violation, they're just there to get assistance in reintegrating into society. The drug treatment court is a voluntary court for folks who are facing new charges, either a supervised release violation or a new indictment information or complaint. And for those folks, we have a variety of eligibility criteria that we use to screen those folks to see whether they would be a good fit for the program.
Are you involved with all of these courts?
I have been, yes.
Okay, tell me about your role within those programs and the roles of your colleagues.
Well, when I was magistrate judge, I ran the Veterans Treatment Court. When I became district judge, that got turned over to Magistrate Judge Robert Ballou, who is now a district judge. When I ran reentry courts in Harrisonburg and in Roanoke. We would do those like 6:30, 6:15 in the evening so folks could work and come in. We would get the assistance of the federal defender, the assistance of the U.S. attorney. Probation plays a key role in those. We would have speakers come in and talk about how to get your driver's license back. What can you do to try to set up payment programs for child support? What can you do to try to get some a job and housing situations? So, and I would just sit in the courtroom. We do them in the courtroom, but I wouldn't wear a robe. We'd sit around a table and just talk. The Veterans Treatment Court, we've kind of morphed over time. It started out, no, I'm sorry, the Drug Treatment Court has kind of morphed over time. We started out having it meets every 2 weeks, and there's two components to the programs. First, beforehand, there's a meeting with the Drug Treatment Court team. And the Drug Treatment Court team consists of the court. In fact, we had in the fall three district judges and a magistrate judge. Judge Robert Ballou, Judge Elizabeth Dillon, myself, and Magistrate Judge Kai Memmer, all participating in this one drug treatment court. But because of our schedules, we couldn't always be there. So sometimes it would be just one of us. Sometimes it would be two of us, rarely three of us. But we would hand it off to each other so that there was some consistency in the program. We would meet every 2 weeks with our team, and that would be our colleagues, as well as the probation staff that's working with the program, the federal defender who's working with the program, the U.S. attorney working with the program. And one of the things that I think really makes our program successful is we have some community resources who play a really vital role. We have some folks from various treatment programs who participate. One person in particular comes to us from the Hope Initiative at the Bradley Free Clinic, who helps us get folks into treatment programs. She knows the resources. She knows how to get people various places and knows what's available and knows what folks need. We also have the head of psychiatry for our local health system, Dr. Bob Trestman, who is a psychiatrist who does not provide medical treatment during the program, obviously, but he's there to assist us and to help the court assess how the folks are doing in the program and what options would be available to them. So all of us meet, and then we have law clerks, and my career clerk, Linda's always there. Linda Kring's always there. And we talk about the people. We get a spreadsheet beforehand with how they're doing, their successes and their problems. We talk about them in our meeting, usually takes about an hour, and come up with a game plan for how we're going to address any problems or issues in the session when the participants are there. Then the participants come in for the second half of the program, usually takes a couple hours. There's an hour team meeting, and then an hour with the participants. We started out doing it wearing robes and on the bench, but it seemed that was a little too formal. And so now we sit around a conference table, and we wear a suit jacket, and they come in and sit around the table with us. And it's a little more formal, a little more informal. And there's, handshaking and hugs that go on before the court and after the court. Greetings. And then we go through and we ask how the folks are doing. try to figure out what their problems are, what we can do to help them. Sometimes they need sanctions. Sometimes the people go straight from that conference room table into custody. Sometimes they go straight into another treatment program. Sometimes we'll counsel with them and see what their problems are and try to brainstorm and help them. You know, these are all folks who are struggling with addiction. And it's a terrible problem. And what we've come to realize after we've done this 5 years now, our program started in 2018. We've come to realize that there are that relapse is part of the recovery. It's just part of the recovery. And so, you know, we're not going to penalize somebody for having a relapse if they're honest with us. But one of the things we stress is honesty. And if you're not honest with us in the drug treatment court program, then we've got a significant problem with them. You know, our district's pretty geographically big. We have 6 courthouses. And so some of the folks come into our drug treatment court by video from either defender's offices or probation officers in other divisions.
I'm curious if there are any particular success stories that jump out at you that you'd like to share with us.
Linda, tell Lori what our statistics have been over the course of the last 5 years with our participants.
Sure. We have had a total of 86 referrals to the program and have accepted 50 of the 86. And of the 50, we have had 23 people graduate, and we have 9 active participants at the moment. And our graduation rate is 59%. I'm not exactly sure how that holds up, like, on a national level, but I think it's fairly high.
We've had some good success, and here's the metric that I think is the most important. Of the 23 folks we've had graduate, only 3 have gotten into any legal trouble after that we're aware of. Two have gotten involved with drugs again, and 1 picked up a DUI. But 20 of the 23 folks are doing well. We had a young woman who really had significant difficulties with opiates. She had been a paralegal. She was smart. But her addiction to opiates caused her to lose her job, lose her paralegal certificate, lose her family. She had a number of kids. She lost custody of all of them, and she was living on the streets. It was a disaster. She came into the drug treatment court program, and she had her fits and starts. She had some initial failures, but we stuck with her. She was honest with us. And now, 3 or so years later, after graduating, she owns a home, has a job, and she's doing peer counseling. She's doing peer counseling for substance abuse folks, has reconnected with her family, gotten some of her children back, and she frequently comes back to our court and gives pep talks to the participants. Because one of the things about this program, if you're charged with a supervised release violation and your guidelines are, you know, 4 to 6 months or something like that, what's your incentive to coming into a program that causes you to come into court every 2 weeks for 18 months? What's your incentive? It may not be very high. The program demands a lot of these people. They've got to show up every 2 weeks and be drug tested every 2 weeks and to let us know how they're doing. But for those folks who are charged with supervised release violations who graduate, we dismiss the supervised release charge. If they've got any time left on their period of supervision, we usually let them terminate their supervision because they've done so well. And then for some folks who are charged with new violations, either by indictment or complaint or information, those folks can have their charges dismissed, or those folks can just get a probation sentence and no active jail time by completing this program. It's a rigorous program. It demands a lot. We have some folks who simply drop out of it. I remember one young man a few years ago. I'll tell you the story, then I'll be quiet. One young man of a few years ago who had repeatedly kept testing positive for marijuana. And one day at drug treatment court, we gave him the choice. We said, okay, you can go into custody right now for the weekend as a sanction for your positive test. And you can stay in our drug treatment court program with an eye toward getting your supervised release violation charge dismissed and successfully completing supervision. Or you can walk out the door, no jail time right now, and then we'll just, you can just resign from the drug treatment court program, and then we'll consider the merits of the supervised release violation hearing. And we do that without regard to how they've done in drug treatment court. That's really important. But in any event, he sat there and he talked with his lawyer, and he decided to go into custody on his own. He chose to go into custody for the weekend. We let him out early that next week. After that, he had absolutely no trouble.
Wow.
He graduated, and by all accounts, is doing very well. So we put it on him. He made the choice. He chose the sanction to stay with the program, and he was successful. It really is kind of a high point in the program for me.
Sure. Well, that's a great transition into my next question. I was going to ask you what you enjoy most about your involvement with these problem-solving courts.
You know, all of us who do this job understand the pervasive and insidious impact of mental health and addiction problems. And those of us who have the responsibility to sentence folks who have these issues and to deal with criminal cases of folks who have these issues, you know, the tools that we have don't remedy the root of the criminal conduct, and we really need to get to the root of it. And so being able to do this drug treatment court is the best work I do. It is the most uplifting. It is also sometimes the most maddening, because you know, you give, we work really hard. If someone's honest with us, we will cut them slack, and we will give them breaks and allow them to participate, understanding that relapse is part of the recovery, if they're honest with us. If they're not honest with us, then they won't stay in the program. But so it can be maddening if folks don't take advantage of it, and frustrating. But when folks are successful, and when folks turn their lives around, as many of these folks we have seen do, it is the most positive experience that you can have as a federal judge, because you have really helped somebody change their life and change their life for the better. Doesn't happen too often when you're sentencing people. You know, you can hope for the best and try to give a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary and appropriate and provides for all the 3553A factors. But here we have a chance to have a direct influence on changing these people's lives. And it can be very rewarding.
So what advice would you give to somebody who may be listening and thinking about starting a program in their district?
You know, it's a great question. One of the things that is hard about this, and that's why I'm so glad the Sentencing Commission is looking at this, because there's no statute, there's no nothing in the sentencing guidelines, and there's nothing in the guide to judiciary policy about how you go about doing this, right? And so I learned our program a lot from the Bridge program in the District of South Carolina in Charleston, from Judge Brucey Hendricks, who gave a presentation on this at a Federal Judicial Center meeting. The thing that makes this work is because it is a collaborative effort. We are working together. It is the U.S. attorney, the probation department really drives this, the federal defender, folks from the community who are involved in treatment and who have expertise in this. It is that collaborative effort that really makes a difference. One of the things that we did when we started ours, so if you don't have the buy-in from the U.S. attorney and you don't have the buy-in from the defender, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. And the thing about that is so important is this can save a ton of money. It can save a ton of money and it can help change people's lives. One of the things that we did that's a little different when we started our program, not only did we look at what other programs were doing around the country, but we took our written materials, our memorandum of understanding, some of our referral forms and things like that, and we talked with medical professionals and neuroscience specialists about, look, what should we be doing? You know, we're thinking about this as lawyers, right? And one of the things that I've learned over the years in dealing with folks who have substance abuse issues is, and I've learned this from substance abuse professionals and neuroscientists, is that our perspective in the criminal justice system is very different from that of someone who abuses controlled substances. For example, when I'm talking to somebody about a period of supervised release, it's 2 years or 3 years or 5 years. But the horizon, what these professionals tell you, is that the horizon of a substance abuser is far shorter, measured in hours, typically less than 48 hours. So while we expect someone using controlled substances to stay clean for a year or 2 years, they're not thinking about that. They're thinking about today. And so it's one of the reasons why we meet every 2 weeks. And the other thing is, probation is in touch with these people all the time. It does require much more from probation to participate and supervise folks in this program than folks who are just out there on supervision. It is something that requires a lot of them. And, you know, I think maybe some of our probation folks went into our program 5 years ago with, oh, the judge wants me to do this, I'll do it, right? And now they're some of our biggest fans. They have bought in, right, Linda? They have bought in.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's just very rewarding, right? It's rewarding for them because they see their people become successful, and it's very nice to work collaboratively with the judges and with the FPD and U.S. Attorney's Office. It's just a different experience from our day-to-day working in the court system. Yeah. And, right. And to your question about what somebody might think of when they're wanting to start a drug treatment court, I think the most important thing would be to visit another drug treatment court or two and just to start getting a feel for what they look like. And the FJC also has a lot of materials. They do a workshop every couple of years, a quality improvement program, they call it, where representatives of drug treatment court go for a few days and observe how other courts work and then meet monthly for a year after that for feedback from the FJC folks who are professionals and who have a really, good collection of materials from over the past several years.
You know, Linda, that's a great point. We got the opportunity to participate. Our district got the opportunity to participate in this Federal Judicial Center Quality Improvement Program. I didn't go because I couldn't, but another district judge, Judge Dillon, went. Linda, you went. Probation officers went. Magistrate judge couldn't go at the time. FPD went. Did U.S. Attorney go?
Yeah, sure.
U.S. Attorney went. They went out to Waco, Texas, and saw other programs out there, and then got together with groups from all over the country, and then over the course of the last year have been refining our program based on that work and meeting regularly to improve ours.
Right, and ours, we do ours partway in person and partly via Zoom, and anybody who wanted to sit in on our board could do that, right?
Right. If someone is interested in seeing how we do things, they can join our drug treatment court by Zoom.
That's a great opportunity.
That's easy to do. Just get in touch with me or Linda Kring, my career law clerk, and we could link someone in so you could see exactly how we run this and what we do.
Well, perfect. Thank you for sharing that with our listeners. That's a great opportunity for someone who may not be able to travel to go out and visit some of these courts. But I want to thank you both for taking time to speak with us today. We really appreciate all the information you gave us and hearing about the success stories that you've had. And thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you so much, Lori. Linda and I both greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Commission Chats. Stay tuned for more episodes in our Problem Solving Courts miniseries. For more information on Problem Solving Courts, visit our website, ussc.gov, and hover over the Education tab to access all of our Problem Solving Courts resources. Commission Chats is now available on Spotify and iTunes, so be sure to follow along with us there. If you'd like to receive the latest news from the Commission, you can find us on LinkedIn or we are at the USSCGov on X. That's all for now. I'm John Scapini, and thanks for listening to Commission Chats.